Hi, this is Chris Evans recording another Storage Unpacked podcast. This week I'm in the Bay Area and I've got a great opportunity to catch up with the CEO of Hedvig, Avinash Lakshman.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Hi Avinash, how are you?
Oh, great.
Could you just take a couple of minutes to tell everybody who you are and what your company does, and then we'll dive into the conversation.
Absolutely. First of all, thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity to talk to you. My name is Avinash Lakshman. I'm the founder and CEO of Hedvig. For those who are not aware of what Hedvig is, we believe that we are the first truly native hybrid and multi-cloud data management system.
Wow. Okay. That encompasses quite a lot of things, doesn't it?
It does. And I think we have enough time to go over all of them.
Yeah. Okay. So in terms of background, you were involved in quite a few, I'll class it as famous or, you know, well-known technologies at some of the large organizations like Facebook, Google.
Yes, I've been doing distributed systems for about a dozen years right now, and I was one of the three guys who co-invented Amazon Dynamo.
Okay.
Dynamo, as you guys know, is a genesis for the NoSQL movement.
Yeah.
And then later moved to Facebook, and Apache Cassandra was my brainchild.
Right.
And those were the two big systems that I had the opportunity to build.
Perfect. Okay. Let's just set the scene for everybody so we know what we're talking about. I was trying to work out whether we would call you a software-defined platform or not. And really, this conversation is just to frame some of where we are with that software-defined storage and what it is people are really looking for. And are we in like a generation two or even a generation three of that, where we're not just talking about products, we're talking about data management, and it's a different argument. So really the idea of this conversation is just to talk about software defined, where we think the market is, what your opinion is, what you think is driving it, and so on. So
absolutely.
What would you say in terms of, if we look at software defined storage, where do you think we've got to with the technology as it is today compared to, you know, 5 years ago when people first started?
I think 5 years ago, this was perhaps, I would say, at its infancy. There was no notion of anyone delivering storage capabilities via software.
Yeah.
Meaning, of course, even if you look at the incumbents, and even if you look at the storage assets that one had gotten from the previous generation, one can make the argument that, hey, it's all software, but it's riding on proprietary hardware.
Yeah. Right?
I guess where the distinction became very obvious is where you should be able to disaggregate the two. Meaning, you should be able to consume a storage platform as purely software bits and be able to run it on hardware of your choice. Of course, there would be SKU recommendations that vendors could make.
Of course, yeah.
Because, I mean, there's a lot of things that go into making those decisions. But it could be commoditized.
Yeah.
That's the essence. And the other thing that I've learned over the last few years is that people always talk about, when they talk about software defined, they also seem to talk about hyperconvergence and non-hyperconvergence. I think that does not fit the bill here, because that's an architectural choice.
Yeah.
That's a conversation that you have after you've concluded whether someone is software defined or not, because you could deploy them either in a hyperconverged fashion or in a non-hyperconverged fashion. So
right.
That's
okay.
More architectural rather than, you know, whether you want your bits to be delivered as pure software that can run on any hardware.
Okay, great. So do you think the enterprise has really bought into this as a technology? Because the enterprises typically have consumed storage that's been given to them by big vendors like EMC and, you know.
Agreed. But I think there's been a fundamental change, and we are seeing this change accelerate right now.
Okay.
And what has happened is over time, it's not about just you have to deliver it as software, because everyone is looking to have some kind of a future proofing with the cloud in mind. It could be a hybrid-like environment. It could be someone having a mandate to move entirely to the cloud. Now, if you move entirely to the cloud, then the next level of thinking that needs to go through is, do you want to be running just entirely in a single cloud vendor, or hedge your bets across multiple cloud vendors? Now, if you have to do that, do you want to have your infrastructure to be multi-cloud enabled? Now, again, multi-cloud means a lot of things to a lot of people. We have a definition for it, which we can talk about as the talk proceeds. But these are all things that come to mind, and these were not things that were being brought to the table 5 years ago. So that's where we are in the evolution right now. And unless you have the capabilities to deliver those cloud-like capabilities, I think it's a lost battle.
Yeah, so we'll come on to cloud in a little while, but I think you're right. That cloud concept is definitely important. So there were some other things that I looked at and thought might be important, and it'd be interesting to get your take. So for instance, I looked at it and thought cost is a key factor with SDS, or it seemed to be in the early days.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is other things coming in, like the ability to put features in there, automation perhaps now, and even more so simplicity for people who are in DevOps environments who necessarily don't want to care how that's done.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say the most ones important ones you've seen other than what you've already said already?
I think it's a mixture of all of them. And cost manifests itself in two ways, right? There's CapEx, and then there's OpEx.
Yeah.
CapEx business, I think everybody understands. It's purely about how I can get my assets so that I can drive my cost down. But the OpEx is where the key is. I mean, that's where the DevOps mentality comes in. You want to be able to be more agile, spring up instances as and when you need them, shrink them down, etc. I don't think any of the vendors from yesteryears would have even thought about that kind of an environment. You know, it was a very caged, very siloed environment. And the area in the data center where it was very sanctimonious. I mean, you cannot have random people go in there and do stuff. I think that's completely changed with the advent of cloud. And so, when you think of DevOps, you have to think of OpEx and driving that OpEx cost down. So cost comes in multiple ways and it spreads into all these other areas. Yeah.
You've just pointed out something I think that's really fascinating, which I hadn't thought of in that sense with SDS, a modern SDS, and that's that scale up, scale down type scenario where traditional vendors simply just don't want you to do that. You know, EMC wants, or I shouldn't pick on EMC all the time, but they're the easiest, possibly the easiest one to do, but they want you to put a box
on. You can,
on the,
I can.
Yeah, I guess I can. Yeah. So they want you to put a box on the floor and they never want that box to come off the floor until you refresh that box with another one.
Exactly.
But they're happy for you to add to it. But actually, in reality, scaling is a two-way thing.
And also think about scaling in the following way. In modern systems, modern architecture, we are an ideal representative of that. There's no notion of forklift upgrade, meaning you don't buy something for a period of time, and then when that period expires, you don't buy something else and take everything that you had here and move it there.
Yep.
You ought to be able to stretch things horizontally. And you also ought to be able to take advantage of newer hardware innovations in a way where you can bring the newer guys in and phase out the older ones that you had. You could never do that in the yesteryears. So
yeah, I think you're right. And I think I like that side of the concept of what VMware might have called software-defined data center many years ago. But I think we all can see that now where it's almost like you would like a factory where at one end of the factory, new hardware comes in. At the other side of the factory, old hardware is being thrown away. And the stuff that runs on it doesn't really change.
Exactly.
And that's, I guess, the model.
That's only going to get better and better over time. It's an appreciating asset in the data center.
Right. So you talked about HCI very early on there. Do you think that's a feature of HCI, that ability to do that scale out, put stuff in and take it out? Do you think that's why that's become popular as a storage sort of platform?
No, I don't think so. I think the reason why it had become popular, at least from my vantage point, it's more about simplicity. It's very cookie cutter-ish in nature, right?
Okay.
I need more something, I'm just going to buy an extra cube and put it in there. But again, keep in mind, it's an architectural choice that people make. I believe architectural decisions people should be free to make. It should not be mandated.
Okay.
And with HCI, you're practically mandating that to everybody. I believe the better approach would be if you have something that can be deployed as HCI or not,
okay,
dependent completely on the needs of the customer that you're dealing with.
So let's get on and talk about public cloud and the way that public cloud has affected software-defined. Do you think the fact that people like AWS with S3 have popularized the concept of software-defined storage because they're delivering you a service that delivers storage, but you don't really know how it's implemented?
See, it's interesting you mention S3 because S3 is just object storage, which means that it's only going to cater to certain needs. It does not, in my opinion, I mean, you could build on top of it, but it's not designed for general purpose workloads, right?
Yeah.
So, but here's the thing about cloud though, and that's where being software defined becomes very critical. If you want to run your software on the cloud, you got to deliver it as software bits. If you want to run your system on the cloud.
Yes.
You cannot, there's no way of shipping your box to the cloud.
Right? No, that's true.
Yeah, that doesn't exist. Now, cloud has a lot of ramifications. I mean, a lot of people are looking at cloud in terms of bursting compute into the cloud, but having the storage in their own controlled environment.
Yeah.
But in order to deliver those capabilities, you've got to also respect that the laws of physics always come into play. And you cannot be too far away in order to, you know, control your latencies. So typically people deploy in the same colos where the cloud guys are also running.
Yeah.
When you run in the cloud, you also need to be cognizant of the fact that when data goes into the cloud, that's cheaper than pulling data out of the cloud. So when you're running in a multi-cloud or even in a hybrid cloud-like environment, you want to be cognizant of all those to keep your costs down and curtailed and controlled.
So that's an interesting one. And that, I guess, leads us on to that whole concept of hybrid. And I agree with you, there's a real issue there that says if you want to build a hybrid environment, you've got to cater for certain other issues like networking, mm-hmm. like how you actually deliver consistent performance across different platforms. So do you think, because we'll talk about the technicalities of that in a minute, but are you seeing that customers genuinely want hybrid cloud, multi-cloud? Are you seeing that happening?
Yes, we are seeing that. In fact, we won a very large customer just a couple of weeks ago. I can't mention the name yet, but
okay.
These guys are going to be a mixture of hybrid and multi-cloud in the entire architecture.
Right. Right?
And the reason they're doing that is multifold, especially if you look at what's happening in the UK and in Europe, where data sovereignty rules are all very important.
Absolutely.
And you need to be able to control where the application's data resides
yep.
from a geographical perspective. And at least from our perspective, the way we deliver that capability, we call it declarative data sovereignty, where you can come into our system and say, oh, this application needs this volume, and for this volume, I want the data to reside across these regions. And the system will honor that quote-unquote policy,
yeah.
right? Now, that's one of the driving factors for even if I have these cloud regions in these areas, I don't want to leave these regions. So what are my options there? I could have AWS, I could have Azure. Can I spread the load across both of them? The ability to have an infrastructure that can actually deliver that and span across these environments becomes very critical.
But do you think, are customers actually wanting to do that? Are they coming to you and saying, please give us something that we can put some on AWS and some on Azure and
That's what we're going after.
Right,
and
okay.
we are winning customers.
Okay, so people are absolutely
yes.
wanting
and
to
these
do
are
that.
All Fortune 500, Fortune 1000 companies.
Yeah.
You're not gonna have, you know, the medium, the mid-market or, you know, small to mid-market going after that. The thing is, they might go all cloud. And again, there is a lot of things we can do in the cloud that is complementary to the services that are already being provided. So it's all about making yourself relevant in those environments.
Yeah. Okay. So you touched a little bit there on the start of data mobility. Clearly, that ability to present data in many places at the seemingly at the same time, shall we say?
Yes.
You know, how you do it behind the scenes is a technical challenge, obviously. Do you think that's what people are using these sort of services for? And I'll give you an example. I would look at it and say, if I had an application that was running in AWS today, there might be a reason why I want to lift and shift to run in Azure for whatever reason. But I don't want to sit there and do a data migration task to be able to achieve that. I just want to make sure the data is visible in both locations.
Exactly.
So do you think, is that what customers are really interested in?
We are talking to customers today that really need that kind of capability. And based on what we know, I think we are the only ones who can provide that capability very natively through the platform.
Do you want to touch on some of the challenges you see with that as an architecture? Because people might think that it's just a case of copying data, and I don't think copying data is enough. You know, consistency for a start is a real issue there, isn't it? You know, making sure that if I access it in one place, it's the same content in another, for example.
Agreed. But, you know, most of the people who are doing these kind of things are coming from a virtualization kind of a background. And if you look at virtualization per se, VMs are single writer environments for the most
yes.
part.
Yes, well, that's right. True, yeah.
And so you could access them from n number of places, but you're not going to do that at the same time.
Same time, no,
right?
No, agree.
Now, those are some of the architectural advantages that you can take advantage of these requirements to
yep.
drive that capability into your platform, which is what we have essentially done. Now, what we could do, even to cut down latency and things like that, and I touched upon that briefly when I said declarative data sovereignty. In our system, we could say, you know, for this volume, replicate the data across sites A, B, and C. Now, I use the term site very loosely. For us, a site's a site. Doesn't matter whether it's on-prem or whether it's somewhere in the cloud,
yeah.
right? Now, of course, it's very powerful, but when I give you something very powerful, one also needs to realize that one ought to be very responsible. If you want to do a three-way replication between three sites, we would ask you to make sure that two sites are close to each other because
okay.
we can deal with that architecturally in the system through design and implementation, where applications will not see the impact of the father's site when you're replicating, right? And you touched upon consistency. There's other kind of design decisions and choices that we have made where you will always be consistent, but you will never pay the price of reading, you know, data that is stale. You will never, that problem will never exist because of the decisions that we have made.
Okay.
But you got to make certain choices very intelligently where you need to have, if it is three sites, you need to have two close to each other and things like that.
Okay, so there are architectural choices which you put into the platform
exactly.
to allow that to happen. Do you think I mean, from your perspective, you're enabling customers to do something they possibly couldn't do before.
Yes.
Are you seeing sort of like new ideas coming up and you know, things that people have not been able to do in the past? Is it a creative thing or is it just a cost-saving thing?
You mean what we are delivering?
What people are deciding to use multi-cloud for, yeah.
Oh, see, multi-cloud, the usage for multi-cloud is multifold. One is, you know, you want to avoid a giant lock-in. This happens in business all the time. Forget computer science, IT. Anytime you're reliant on one entity, it's perhaps even happens in life. You never want to be dependent on one entity for survival.
I've got two broadband connections at home. I'm not dependent on one or the other.
There you go. So anytime you want to always hedge your bets.
Yeah.
And you had brought up something about copying data.
Right.
See, the thing that I mentioned about the cloud, it is cheaper to get data in than to get data out. So one of the reasons why you do not want to copy data is for that very, avoid the tax you're going to pay to copy data out from one cloud to another, which is what you would do in the absence of a fabric that can stretch and span across.
Yes.
And not provide you that locality of access to data. That is why it becomes very important to think about these things strategically. And also, if you look at environments like AWS, there's a lot of fundamental primitive services that are available in there that people leverage. So do we.
Right.
But there is no implicit fault tolerance across regions if you're running virtualizing, say, EBS volumes.
Yeah.
We can sit on top of that and provide that capability seamlessly. That becomes very important.
And that's an interesting subject. Before we move on in a second, but that's an interesting fact that to a certain degree, what the cloud providers are providing only reaches a certain level. You know, their products get to a certain point, and really actually what you have to do is you have to build on top of it.
Yes. And that's not to take a dig at them, but they're giving you these building blocks.
Yeah.
And then one needs to leverage those building blocks to build fault tolerance and things like that on top of it.
Yeah. Interesting. Let's touch on the DevOps side of things, and I'm sure you must have customers who are looking at building environments out for the developers in order to do their developing, for want of a better word, expression or way of saying it. What impact do you think software-defined is having on DevOps agility and the ability to actually be creative and responsive in development?
See, the thing about that is the moment you think DevOps, you're thinking about complete programmability against a platform,
yeah,
be it control plane or data plane. Now, control plane becomes even more important because everyone has their own kind of fancy orchestration tools today, and so they should be able to leverage the APIs that you have hopefully provided for provisioning, you know, volumes on demand and things like that.
Yeah.
So you got to be completely API-driven for one. Unless you're API-driven, you cannot integrate into every one of those orchestration tools that are out there. So it becomes very imperative for you to have that mindset.
Do you think that we could do with standard APIs like S3? Do you think we should have had the equivalent for block and file?
To a certain degree, it is standardized already, right? For example, for block, what's the API? It's, I would say, SCSI, right? Whether it's iSCSI or whether it's fiber channel.
Yeah.
That's a delivery mechanism. But let's just go with iSCSI, right? And if it is file, there are only two options. It's either NFS or SMB, standardized, right? The new kid on the block is object storage. And I think S3 APIs are the standard for object storage. So it has been kind of standardized for you. So you could build your infrastructure in whatever way you want. As long as you adhere to these APIs or these mechanisms for access, I think you're good. The key is to think about what a lot of people forget is that traditional APIs like NFS, iSCSI, they're point to point. They're not built keeping distribution in mind. S3 is different because it's a modern era API. But how do you build the distribution on top of those APIs? That's where the key challenges come in, and that's what we have overcome.
I would look at that and say, for instance, if I was building an interface into a higher level orchestration solution, I might want something that I could, through an API, say, give me a file system. I want it to be called this, and it sits in some sort of hierarchy, and I need to give these applications permission to it, and I need to expose that file system in site 1, site 2, site 3. Is that the sort of thing that you're doing, or do you think that's where the future might get us towards?
That's exactly what we are doing, but I wouldn't call it a file system because you need a layer of abstraction on top of it, which is what we internally call a virtual disk.
Okay.
And what we basically do is when someone wants to, let's say someone wants to run a database and they want to deem their database to be DR, right? Mm-hmm. Then what they could do is, and if they want to use Hedvig, what they would typically do is come in and say, come to Hedvig and say, I need a virtual disk of size, say 1 terabyte, and I want it to be implicitly DR, so I want it replicated three ways, and hopefully their cluster spans multiple data centers, so they can pick the data centers into which they want that data replicated, so that it's available even, and the system is designed to withstand entire site outages. So you just come and specify those policies, either through management or through the API, that volume's created and ready for you for consumption.
Okay.
You can consume it either as a block device or as or via NFS SMB or even through S3 if that's what you want to do.
Well, that was, I think, a really interesting sort of walkthrough where we are today and what we're doing with things. Where do you think we're going to go in the future? What do you think we're missing today that will need to be fixed as we go forward? And clearly, you must have thoughts about your own roadmap for a start, I guess, for your own product. But just interesting to hear what you think is, you know, what hasn't been fixed yet.
Man,
that's a tough question, isn't it?
That's a difficult question. Because
I'm asking you to look in a crystal ball and foresee stuff that we don't even know.
I wish I had that crystal ball.
I agree.
I think the challenges will typically come in the form of, at least based on the experience that we have had thus far. Leave the system aside for a moment. There's enough things to be done there. But what you would also need is this ability to build this kind of ecosystem of tools that helps make debuggability simpler.
Okay.
To get insights into what is going on and be able to gather these data from these clusters that you deploy worldwide and through a single pane of glass analyze these data and make preemptive recommendations to customers, right? I mean, one should be able to do things like, hey, you know, in Mr. Customer, in this particular cluster, on that particular node, there is this disk that could potentially be going bad. You may want to look into replacing it.
Okay.
That level of prognosis and being able to do it preemptively, I think is going to be very, very critical as the world moves towards in this direction.
Yeah. Now, what do you think about moving higher up the stack? Because I look at a lot of what we talked about, and it's quite traditional storage management and admin type stuff. What about going further up the stack and looking at the data itself, the content? Do you see that being more integral going forward as a concept?
I mean, we are looking at it.
Okay.
Whether everyone should, I don't know, but we are looking at it from the following perspective. It all depends on if you, like we believe we have a foundational system that is extremely robust, very strong. Now, once that's delivered, you want to move up the stack and see what else you can do, because the more up the stack, the market today is in need for complete solutions. Providing a building block makes it a harder kind of a sale.
Okay.
So I think the more complete the solution, the easier it is for you to push your solution through into the market. I've always believed that primary and secondary should not be distinguished in this from a systems perspective.
Right.
You should be able to run primary and secondary workloads on the same platform just by changing, you know, policy or hardware SKU. And being able to move up the stack and do more closer integrations makes it very imperative for you to deliver that end-to-end capability.
Yeah.
For example, on the primary side, I mean, we have done a lot of integration into vSphere, for instance, or into Kubernetes and things like that. On the secondary side, I mean, we have worked very closely with Veritas, and we provide our own OST plugin and things like that.
So people can do backup directly out of your platform.
Exactly. Yeah. So that way you can dedupe at the source, and you can also consume your network more efficiently, right? The fact that we are doing global deduplication on the platform makes one look at us more seriously, because you can now get better data efficiencies over time. And also moving up the stack and providing data, you know, orchestration capabilities could be very powerful. And those are all things that we are looking at. And we are looking at it mainly to get as much footprint in the data center as possible.
Okay, great. Well, I think that was a really useful and really interesting conversation. And thank you very much for taking the time. Where can people find you online, find the company online, find you online? I don't know whether you use Twitter particularly.
Yes, I do.
Excellent.
Hedwig.io, that's the website. The Twitter handle is HedwigEng. That's what I use to tweet.
Okay.
I've been getting more and more into it. I'm pretty serious. When I write something on the internet, I don't like to joke around. I joke around outside. So, but you can find me on Twitter over there. And we are actually expanding like crazy. We are hiring like crazy. And I think we are really breaking into the Fortune 500 really well, especially with our partnership with HPE. So things are really cranking up over here.
Excellent. Okay. Avinash, thanks again.
Thanks a lot, Chris.
Thank you.